In business, you rarely hear the expression for life. You make a purchase for a product, for a service, and there's a time frame there. Well, that's not the case with Awaken 180 weight loss. Allow me to explain. You know, a year ago, I started with Awaken 180 weight loss and had incredible success losing weight. But you can lose all the weight in the world and not keep it off. And what good is it? That's why I have support for life from Awaken 180. Yeah. I mean, I go back for check-ins and make sure everything's going smoothly, but if I ever had a problem, the counselors are there to get me back on track. Why don't you do what I did and call for a consultation? 844-346-1800. 844-346-1800 or go to awaken180weightloss.com.
Welcome to It's Personal, Finance Canada. I'm Christine Conway.
And I'm Cameron Conway.
And this podcast is a very personal look at personal finance in Canada. Welcome to It's Personal, Finance Canada. I'm Christine Conway, here with Cameron Conway. And today we're going to be talking about the secret ingredient of investing. We call it a secret ingredient because you can still have a good investment, like you can still make a good batch of cookies, but it just won't taste the same without that extra special something that's really juicing up your growth and making you feel successful.
So it's cinnamon, right? Sorry, I got distracted by the cookies. It's okay, though. Sugar? Well, I know if you get the ratios wrong, it kind of screws everything up. Too much baking soda makes it soggy and all this other kind of stuff, but we're talking about investing, by the way you're looking at me right now.
We are, and we're talking about one of the most overlooked elements, in my opinion anyways, of investing.
Oh, I know. It's platinum.
Oh my goodness.
How about rhodium?
Not those kinds of elements.
Wait, I got one. Latinum. Sorry, I've been binge watching DS9 again. Continue.
Well, what I'm actually talking about is capital appreciation. And what I mean by that is the change in value of the underlying asset. So this conversation is going to be for investors that are looking for a growth-oriented strategy. And before you say to me, Cam, well, isn't everybody looking for a growth strategy? No, actually, they're not. There are a lot of investment styles out there. Well, people might value security or capital preservation, or even just steady eddy dividend payments and not a whole lot of underlying growth. So like I said, this particular episode is for those that have been trying to get that maximum growth, but feel like something's been missing.
Exactly. They're trying to go the max power route for their investments because they're at that age or they have those kinds of goals. Because I don't know a lot of 80-year-olds who want to go the high risk, high growth option. But people who are looking to get the most out of their investments, how to balance things out properly, and just how to get things to the point where it's going to fulfill your goals, the capital appreciation talk is something that needs to happen.
Right. And in the truest definition, I mean, capital appreciation, as it's defined, is really just the difference between the purchase price of an asset and its sale price. But like I said, from our point of view, for the purpose of this discussion, we're looking for stuff that's really growthy, that has really high growth potential. So let's start by talking about what it's not. And let's start with stocks. I mean, stocks are one of the most popular investments out there, whether you're investing in them individually or you're holding some as part of a fund. And I would say if you're holding them as part of a fund, it's even more important to understand what's actually in your fund, specifically what's in your top 10 in your fund, especially if your fund is highly weighted in that top denomination.
Yeah, depending on the fund, the top 10 could be anywhere from like 15%. And I've seen some go as high as like 65, 70%.
So let's talk about kind of the normal person's experience with their investments. And I mean, you know, we've done this too. You get your investment statement twice a year. It's been sitting on your kitchen table for a few weeks, just staring at you, taunting you from the envelope. You're not sure if you want to open it or not, but you finally decide to open it. And all that you're looking for is, am I up or am I down? What is my percentage of gain or loss? And you kind of either smile to yourself and say, man, we've had a good run this year, Or you kind of, if you know, you're looking at it more recently, you might just put it down slowly and back away and say, okay, better luck next time. But for a lot of people, that's essentially the extent of their participation in their investments. And I think that when you leave it at looking only at the change in the value of your investment and not the actual underlying investment and the reasons why it's either growing or not growing, you miss the opportunity to make decisions about that investment that can really influence those gains that you're looking for down the road.
Yeah, I understand why stocks are so popular. We kind of watch TVs and movies of the stock traders and hedge fund guys making millions of dollars. It's all about reaping the benefits of other people's hard work. Throw in your few dollars, get that stock and either get a dividend or sell it high or crawl into a puddle of shame as you watch it fade into oblivion. But that's the kind of risk you take. And a lot of people, they gravitate towards this because they realize the basics of our economy is everything gets more expensive, so money needs to grow. If your money doesn't grow, then you just can't keep buying. And investing is usually one of the easiest options, either through stocks directly or through a fund, because you don't need the huge down payment for real estate. You don't have to start your own business. Essentially, you're just betting on someone else to succeed or fail.
Yeah, and you're an owner. You know, as a shareholder, you're stepping into the owner class. And so that's why if this was your own small business, it would be so important to really understand what's going on, how the decisions are being made, and what the potential is for the company that you're looking at. Because that potential, that ability to innovate, that ability to drive productivity, to get the most of the assets that you have, whether it's through a new product or offering or something that's in development, that is where the growth really is going to happen. I mean, think of Tesla as a prime example. New technology, new innovation, huge rewards. Or even think of Amazon, something as simple as just a new way of doing business, a new delivery model where anything is accessible at a click of a button, innovation. Those are the kinds of things that drive massive capital appreciation because the underlying business itself has had that explosion of growth due to management's decisions.
Yeah, and for the everyday investor, you got to experience all the goodness and growth without taking all the upfront risk. Like you said, Amazon before, that was just some crackpot idea to sell books over the internet. How dare they compete with Walmart, Barnes & Noble, and all the other bookstores that don't exist anymore?
Yeah. Well, and that just shows how as a society, we evolve and we change. And as new technologies and as new things come to the forefront, it can revolutionize the way we view life as we know it. And perfect example of that right now. I mean, it didn't take a pandemic to have that happen. I think if you just play on human nature, people by nature love convenience and are willing to pay for that. So anything that makes people's lives easier could have an element of growth.
Yeah, people are willing to pay for it. And there's also a subset of people willing to invest in the people providing that simplicity for people. And this is where a lot of this kind of comes into play with investing. And now with us trying to look at this whole talk of capital appreciation and figuring out which of these funds and which of these stocks are the ones that are actually going to give us a good net return at the end and which is just a fad, what's going up, what's going down, and how to make sense of everything.
Right. So where we are today, we're at the end of a quarter, and the end of a quarter gives us an opportunity to see some earnings reports. And earnings reports are the average person, the average investor's chance to get an inside look at what's going on in a company.
Yeah, and these aren't really hard to find. If you just type in any company and add investor relations to the Google search, it'll bring you up to the page that pretty much almost always has it right in the front, or at least one click away.
Right. And this is a document that's heavily regulated by securities regulators. And it's something that the company has an obligation to the investors, to the shareholders, to provide this information for you. So when we're looking at a particular company's earnings report, the first thing I like to do is look at the management's discussion or the management's or executive summary. They're called different things, but essentially it's the person who's in charge or the person who's writing this report, setting out the direction of the company for that quarter. And they'll tell you what they did well, what didn't go well. They'll tell you what they're planning. In a lot of cases, it'll give you some idea and some actual insight into what's going on. And I mean, fund managers, if you're investing in mutual funds or seg funds, the large ones, they get to take this a step further and they get to actually sit down with the managers of these big companies, the CEOs and things like that, and have those meetings where it's the job of the person running the company or the job of the person assigned to talk to these investors, these institutional investors, to really say, where is my company going? Why should you, as the investor, purchase this company? And what are we going to do in this quarter? Or what are we working on longer term that's really going to be good? Now, it shouldn't all be the positives as well. You have to really keep an eye on things like risks, on things like debts. Are they getting out of hand? Are they unchecked? Are there things like negative cash flows? And if so, why? I mean, people always look at the bottom lines, you know, the nets, but at the end of the day, you really want to see what the justification is for the changes that have happened. And I know that in a lot of cases, like Cam, one of the things you look for is stability and trends.
Yeah, those are the two big things I look at, because I'm more of like a growth guy when it comes to this kind of stuff. We'll get into the difference between growth and value in a couple minutes, but because we deal with funds so much at Braun, we have to look at the big, more macro elements of like the top 10 companies that are in a specific fund. So there we're checking their consistent growth, consistent net income, what their earnings before income and taxes is doing, their earnings per share. And because a lot of our clients are ready for getting ready for retirement, we have to make sure that these companies are growing at a steady pace. Yeah, there could be a surprise here and there, but that's what I'm looking at. And going back to the management report, that will usually give you a quick overview if that's happening. And another thing to watch out these management reports is to pay very close attention to what they're not saying, because there could be things going on with competitors, things in the market, other kinds of oddballs and fluctuations. And things they tend not to talk about are the things you should be worrying about in the long term.
Right. And you do see the price of these shares change at earnings report time for the same reason that you or I, looking at our statements that were left on our kitchen table, it's that the market as a whole, as people are receiving this information distributed at the same time, is pricing in the good, the bad, or the ugly. And that's why you can see a share price go up or a share price go down. It's really an oversimplification, but what it's missing is the why. It's missing the what will drive value and growth later on. And our job, or your job as an investor, is choosing stocks or choosing funds that are stacked with high growth potential if you're looking for a growth strategy. And I mean, if you're not, if you're looking for a different strategy, then you would look for whatever speaks to that particular strategy. But that is your best chance at getting those big gains and that capital appreciation that will really spice, or what was it, cinnamon up your cookie recipe.
Well, it is pumpkin spice season, but I want to backtrack for a second to talk about like with the quarterly reports coming out. The issue is with the stock market, it's not always whether it was a good report or a bad report. Half the problem is whether or not it meets up with the expectation of hundreds or dozens of analysts who said, this company should do X in this quarter. And a lot of times the market is moved by whether or not they meet the imaginary threshold set by the analyst. It could be a good quarter, but it felt like a hundredth of a percentage short and the stock will crash. At the same time, it goes the other way. If the little analyst sets a price target or an EPS projection and the company really outperforms it, and then it's going to create a buying spree and send the price soaring for a couple weeks, and then that'll peter out and it'll crash again.
So that's why we're not the managers of big publicly traded companies. How would you like your performance to be judged each quarter based on what other people think you should be doing, based on their knowledge of your company that you're running, where they're not aware of the conversations happening behind closed doors? And let's say you don't invest in specific stocks or specific funds. Let's say you're an index investor and you're saying, okay, great. Well, how is this going to apply to me? All I do is buy the index and I hold it forever and ever and ever. Well, you can kind of gauge the direction by looking at the top companies that are in that particular index. So let's take, for example, the S&P 500. So that value is based on the market cap of each company. And the market cap is really just a metric that looks at the share price of the company and it multiplies it by the total number of shares outstanding. So all of that to say that big companies move the market more because there's more shares and they're at a higher price because people are willing to pay at that higher price because they're typically successful, well-established firms. So if you're kind of wanting to see how that index is going to do, you can just do a quick look at the weighting and the market cap. So as we're recording this day, it's the end of September in 2022, and the top five today are Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Tesla, and Alphabet, which is, of course, Google. So very tech heavy, but these are funds that if they have a bad quarter or a bad earnings report, it can really negatively impact the whole index. Because not only are they highly weighted on the index, they're so popular and they're so influential as market movers that they found themselves to be woven into almost, I don't want to say all, but most or quite a lot of funds out there. And the rationale behind that is for fund managers, if they don't hold something that's so heavily a part of the index, it's much easier to underperform the index if those particular companies do very well.
Well, this would probably be a good time to kind of go over what the difference is between value investing and growth investing. Like we kind of hinted at this a couple of times, but we should probably just say it black and white right now. So value investing is really about saying a stock should be worth X, but as of today, it's worth Y. So the plan is to just buy it and wait till it hits price X. This has at times little to do with the inner workings of a company, bigger parts of the markets. It's someone feels that this stock is undervalued. So I'm going to buy it today. I'm going to hold it. And as soon as it hits this magic number, we're just going to dump it and be done with the company. On the other hand, you have growth investing, which is more about finding opportunities through the innovation, the operation, productivity, or different advantages more on the long-term side that a company can provide. Like I'm going to invest in this company because I think they're a leader in their industry. They're undervalued. They got lots of room for growth opposed to this other one. So the idea here is you are investing in the potential of the company relative to the overall market, rather than just, I'm going to set a price target to sell no matter what happens internally. And this is usually the big push and pull you see with a lot of investors, where some people only care about that incremental, I'm going to buy at $10, sell at $12, I don't care about the company. This tends to happen a lot more with like tech and healthcare, like even going back to like the S&P Christine was talking about. Of those top five companies, only Apple and Microsoft will pay a dividend, where all the others are really the value strategy that you think they're just going to keep growing their stock price, and it's irrelevant of how the actual company is operating at times, which we can kind of see with how like Amazon and Tesla treats different workers at times, but that's a whole different thing. But they recognize that they are a huge magnet to value investors, and as long as the net income goes up and it pushes the stock price, it doesn't really matter. Where you've got other companies where it does matter because it's integral to the sustainability of the business as a whole. And that's where more people kind of go the growth model, because they think that this company is going to be here for the long term. It won't have the wild swings up and down that some value investors have. They just want a good, steady growth. They want the nice dividend, and they don't want all the unpredictability, but they still have a certain tolerance for risk and for growth, because even these more growth companies, they can have good years, they can have mergers and acquisitions, and they can do things to push the stock up, but it won't be the wild swings like you see with 80% of the stocks on the NASDAQ right now.
Right. So for yourself as an investor investing in funds, it's important to realize what the style is of the fund that you're invested in, just so that you don't think you've got something that has high growth potential, but it really doesn't. And I mean, on the value side, it's not necessarily sell everything as soon as you hit a price target. A lot of institutional investors will take a strategy where if it hits a certain price target, maybe they sell 10% of the holding, and then they'll keep the rest long term. A lot of value investing is looking for a sale, and once they've got that sale, hanging on until, like we said, either fair value is reached, or if they do feel, because there can be some proper analysis in there as well, don't get us wrong, it's not completely black and white.
Yeah, I'm just trying to overgeneralize things just to show the dichotomy of these two styles. There is a lot of work that goes into both, but I just want people to see that this is the core difference between the two. It's how you value a company or a stock and how sometimes that can be independent of each other. Okay, now we have a better understanding of value versus growth investing. We should probably start to sum up how capital appreciation can actually help us make decisions and why knowing the difference between those two types of investing can help us.
Sure. So let's go back to the very beginning and let me kind of redefine what I mean when I'm talking about capital appreciation.
It doesn't have anything to do with being very grateful about your money and being kind and considerate to it?
Well, I guess this is a podcast about treating your money well and having it treat you well also. But no, in this sense, when I mean capital appreciation, I'm looking at the underlying asset and specifically the growth potential of the underlying asset. So far we've been talking about stocks. So what I mean by that is there are so many distractions out there. There's a whole wide range of ratios and metrics that you can use to determine fair value, like price to earnings ratio, things like that. They're all good and they all have the place, but so much of the decisions that are made are based on other metrics that are available. So things like price to earnings ratio, even things like market sentiment that are moving the market up and down that have absolutely nothing to do with the underlying stock.
Yeah, this can be like the fear index, whether or not it's real. It's just the perceived notion of fear and speculation will always outweigh logic and proper understanding.
Oh, and it is real. You know, your statement that you're using to gauge performance can be up or down based solely on that in times of incredible volatility. But to get back to the point for capital appreciation, this is all about understanding the story and the growth potential of the stock. Because really, I mean, stocks have a life cycle, same as everything else. And what's really important and what we're really trying to determine when we're looking at those management notes or comments is, are they continuing to innovate? Are they creating something of value that is going to help? Are they productive with the assets and the resources that they have? Are they doing a good job at managing risk and managing debts? And how's cash flow? Is cash flow kind of stacking up well enough to kind of fund these things? I mean, a little trick is if you look at the R&D budget, if that's fallen off the wayside, you know that this company may have come to the place where they're not innovating anymore. And innovation and productivity are the two biggest drivers of growth potential in a stock. So again, how is the underlying company performing?
Yeah, like research and development is a good one to look at depending on the company. Another one would be operating expenses to see if they're going up or down or if they're going up really fast. And another one in some companies could actually be their marketing budget, especially when top line revenues start to slip.
Absolutely. You know, you can fall into the trap as a bigger company of I sell X and that's all I do. I do it all day long. And there's only so many people I can sell this thing to. So I start telling more people to sell more of my product. But if that's all I'm doing, depending on how large my natural market is, I can tap it out. And if I'm not innovating, I'm going to start declining over time. So the next thing that I use as a gauge for the potential for capital appreciation is the overall macroeconomic picture. So where we are in the market cycle, but specifically, where is the demand for this type of product?
Yeah. And when we talk about macro, we kind of talk about the big picture. It's like you take back, you look at the picture of the whole earth rather than using a microscope, look at like one little thing. So this is how the overall picture of everything and how they work together in some sort of socioeconomic tapestry.
Right. So when we're talking about big companies, like we were talking about those companies that were high in the market cap list in the S&P 500, things like Amazon, things like Tesla, Think about those two stories. It's the underlying stock that has grown. I mean, for Amazon, good concept. Like we said, they probably didn't need the pandemic, but the pandemic was a macroeconomic event that really changed behavior. So it positioned a company that's going to distribute things right to your doorstep, incredibly, for growth. So the underlying story can become more important or just as important to understanding someone's prospects as it is just trying to delve into the numbers all the time. And I mean, Tesla, like we'd mentioned before, another great example of that. We've got things like the Paris Accord. We've got our country that has made all these initiatives and agreements globally that they want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And there's Tesla capitalizing. But again, I want to stress it's coming from new technology, research, development, and positioning in the marketplace that'll take the company to the next level. And you see that reflected in the stock price. But again, the price is kind of like a lagging thing. People will pay that price because of what's going on beneath the surface.
Yeah, and people are willing to pay that price. That is going to naturally push up the stock price. Most of the time, there's always hedge funds, short selling, shadiness going on in the background. But for the most part, that demand is going to push up the ticker price on the stock, whether it's a stock or a fund. These things will push up value. And this is where the value guys come in saying, okay, market sentiment is up. The stock price is here. It's going to provide a natural growth. So we think it's going to go up to here. And this is where they jump. Where the growth guys are saying this socioeconomic issue is going to bolster the company. Or on the flip side, it could hinder the company. We saw a lot of brick and mortar stores during the pandemic really start to struggle. Then you have these odd dichotomies like the grocery sector. In Canada, it's doing amazing, but in the States, it's doing poorly. So you got to kind of pay attention to these little nuances.
Right. And you really can't understate the importance of kind of looking out your own proverbial window and just seeing what's going on out there, because it really is the signs of the time that kind of lead you to understanding how these different companies will perform in different circumstances. So again, for the purpose of this talk, we're going high growth. We're going for things that the underlying asset will appreciate over time. And it doesn't just apply to stocks. I mean, if we want to talk about another investable asset class, real estate is a good one to look at. Now, the red herring here is cash flow. Typically, when you talk to real estate investors, that's what they're concerned about. It's, okay, you know what? This is what I'll make off this property. These are my operating expenses. This is my contingency. Here are the taxes I'm going to pay. Here's the management firm I'm going to pay if that's what they're doing. And they all have variations of these calculations that determine how much of a buck they're going to make at the end of the day. And of course, like any other investment, this has to be a profitable venture. And that's kind of why they do those assessments. But if we wanted to translate the concept of capital appreciation to real estate, you would look at like what we saw during the pandemic, the location, so the geography, immigration, the net inflow of supply and demand, new builds, all of that stuff is macroeconomic picture that's contributing to whether or not the underlying asset, the home or the land more specifically that the home is sitting on, is going to appreciate in value. And that appreciation in this context is just simply, is someone tomorrow willing to pay more than I'm willing to pay today? So if I'm a real estate investor, I'm really going to be looking at where my property is located. How is the inflow of people either coming from other parts of the country or are they leaving? How is the demand for this? Is that area in a good location in terms of schools, families, things like that? What clientele are you trying to attract? All of that is going to play into the potential for that property to appreciate. And on the flip side, I mean, we've said before, we used to live in Winnipeg. And I remember, probably a decade ago, talking to a real estate agent with my dad, and he was kind of talking about the market. And he basically, his comment was, yeah, it's flat. It's been flat for the last 10 years. It's going to be flat going forward. And what he meant by that was there's really no growth potential that he saw at that period of time, a decade ago, for the properties in that particular area that we were discussing. So in that sense, there was no capital appreciation. You would get the sticker price, you would get minus the cost of your mortgage, which could reduce the actual value. That's a whole other conversation. But essentially, capital appreciation in an investment takes it to that next level. So it's not just what your return is. I mean, I suppose it's a part of the return calculation, but it's a more overlooked part because it's typically more long-term in nature. And what I mean by that is in a lot of cases, like if we're talking about real estate, you have to sell the asset to be able to realize that gain. And at that point in time, you've figured out what your growth or your appreciation has been.
Yeah, and real estate can be a bit more complicated too because, well, so you've got your initial purchase price, and then you've got your insurance, you've got your closing cost, then you've got the interest on your mortgage, and then, well, we're in BC, so if there's no one in it, you got a vacancy tax to worry about. If people are in it, like where we live, there are extra property taxes just for rentals and for secondary suites, so that could be like an extra $1,000, $1,500 a year, and then there's all these other costs. So you have to figure out at the very end whether you broke even or not, because I think people forget about the mortgage interest. Over a 25-year period, they will pretty much pay double of what they did for their initial purchase price. I think a lot of people don't factor that in, whether they're going to buy the house to hold or hold and flip, or they're going to buy it to rent or something else.
Well, it's based on the interest rate, right? So that's why we're in such a scary and dangerous situation right now with people being so overlevered and debt costs rising. It does put people in a very vulnerable position. And I mean, from a renting point of view, as a landlord, absolutely, there's a point where you're cash flow negative. And at that point in time, if you're not seeing capital growth of your underlying asset over time, what was the point? You know, if you're a mom and pop investor, you're going to exit the marketplace because it doesn't make sense to carry long term at a loss unless you have good promise in the future of realizing additional value through the growth of the underlying asset.
Yeah, so where stocks and funds, that's kind of like the easy option to generate growth through capital appreciation. And then you got real estate, which is kind of the medium one. And then we'll touch this really quick. The hard one would be having to deal with a small business, either buying or starting one from scratch. But these are all different options people will try and use capital appreciation to generate growth for themselves with.
Sure. So with a small business, I mean, we're small business owners here. You measure things differently, right? On one hand, the red herring here is you're kind of just looking at your cash flow and you're saying, okay, is there enough money to pay the staff, pay the bills, pay the rent, keep everyone happy? But the ultimate goal or the goal of the business should be over time to grow it. And I mean, of course, that's not going to be the case for every business, but if you're looking to kind of contribute positively to the economy and you're looking to make a difference and you truly believe in your services or your product, that's going to be something that you're going to be focused on. So capital appreciation in that context as a small business owner is how do I steadily, slowly increase the value of my offerings or increase the value or the positioning of what I'm doing? How do I innovate? How do I manage productivity? How do I manage my human resources to a point where we're being efficient and so efficient that I can eventually scale, grow, help more people, and then everyone's happy? But again, like the real estate conversation, a sale of a business is a long-term event in most cases. So that growth of that asset is what's going to happen over time. And you could take this back to publicly traded companies. They became publicly traded companies because they had grown to the point where it was time, right? It's an incredible way of raising money, raising wealth, and you kind of throw things out into the market and it hits the Wild West. But it's the next step for a lot of businesses.
And at the same time, like we said before, a lot of people will gravitate towards those public companies because they can essentially reap their benefits without having to put in all the hard work to start or buy their own business.
Sure. And on the flip side, really quickly, you can use the capital appreciation test toward other assets as well. So like GICs. A GIC, you're going to get the coupon, right? You're going to get whatever you've agreed to receive as interest payment for loaning the money essentially to whoever you've bought the GIC from. That's the transaction. You're just getting interest. So there's no kind of hidden potential for long-term growth. So if I'm looking at that as an investment, it has a lower yield. And I mean, taxation isn't favorable either in a lot of cases, but there's no happy surprise at the end of the day. There's no potential to be in a much better equity position than you were when you started at the purchase of the GIC, because you basically signed a contract saying, I'm going to get X at the end of the day. That's it, period, right? So if I'm an investor, of course, my risk tolerance is going to play into it, but I'm trying to filter for companies that have a good story and a story that fits in the conditions that we're in today. So that's a little bit about how we look at investments beyond all the other metrics that we can talk about some other time and bore you with some other time, because like I said, all the number stuff can be a little bit overwhelming.
But sometimes if you look at the numbers hard enough, you can find some good opportunities for profit.
And that's the whole game. So I guess that's our time for this week. If you're looking for someone to talk through some of your investment strategies or ideas and you're in the BC area, feel free to reach out to us at Braun Financial, braunfinancial.com. As always, we're happy to meet new people and always happy to help. So until the next time, take care and all the best. I wanted to say something clever. Invest. All the best. Kind of rhymes. No, not funny.
In business, you rarely hear the expression for life. You make a purchase for a product, for a service, and there's a time frame there. Well, that's not the case with Awaken 180 weight loss. Allow me to explain. You know, a year ago, I started with Awaken 180 weight loss and had incredible success losing weight. But you can lose all the weight in the world and not keep it off. And what good is it? That's why I have support for life from Awaken 180. Yeah. I mean, I go back for check-ins and make sure everything's going smoothly, but if I ever had a problem, the counselors are there to get me back on track. Why don't you do what I did and call for a consultation? 844-346-1800. 844-346-1800 or go to awaken180weightloss.com.